From the studios of KXAM, welcome to Tell the Truth Faster, hosted by Stuart Altshuler, marriage and family therapist. Stay tuned and learn how you can open your mind and soul to new possibilities in life. Now here's your host, Stuart Altshuler.
Welcome to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler. I'm a licensed psychotherapist, and this is a show where we deal with mental health issues every week from a very holistic perspective, which means body, mind, and spirit. And some of you may be listening today and saying, well, what does spirituality have to do with mental health? Well, holistic means balance. Body, mind, and spirit. And without, in my opinion, without dealing with the spiritual aspect of who we are and what our purpose is on the planet, and living out that purpose completely and with excitement and joy, then we're not in balance. And all the mental work and all the psychological work and all the healing of our childhood and everything else is going to be for naught if you're not truly connecting with that inner sense of yourself, that inner sense of purpose and reason for being here. And many of us truly, including me, struggle with connecting with that, with identifying with that inner sense of purpose, that higher consciousness, that higher voice, and spend most of our lives in that struggle instead of feeling the joy of actually living it and doing the type of service we're meant to do here on the planet. And that's basically what today's show is going to be about. I'm very pleased and very honored, actually, today to have as my guest Danyon Brinkley. Danyon is an author and a light bearer, a teacher, a student, and somebody who has himself struggled with accepting his purpose and had to go to extremes, literally, in order to be woken up to what he's here to do, and he's doing it beautifully by writing a number of books. You may know his first book, Saved by the Light, and his most recent book, The Secrets of the Light, recently came out. We're going to be talking about some of those secrets today. And before I introduce him more directly, I actually have a connection with Danyon that goes back a number of years, even though I haven't spoken with him in so many years. Starting with my own journey in Los Angeles, in 1989, I was hired by Marianne Williamson, another great teacher, to start this place called the Los Angeles Center for Living, which basically was a place that helped people deal with the issues around death and dying. But in dealing with those issues, to me, you cannot live powerfully and fully if you don't deal with your fears about death and dying. And that's basically what the center was about. It was an incredible place. Now, of course, in the mid-'80s, late-'80s, into the 90s, when the Center for Living existed in Los Angeles, it was in the middle of L.A.'s major wave of HIV and AIDS issues. Now, the center was not only for that, but the multitudes of the clients that came in and the volunteers were definitely either affected or infected with HIV. And out of the Center for Living grew a group called Project Nightlight, or Nightlight Workers, founded by a woman named Cassandra Christensen, who basically trained volunteers how to be at the bedside for somebody, either to help the loved ones as well as the individual that was passing, or to make sure that nobody dies alone, that there's somebody at their bedside. Out of Nightlight grew a group called Compassion in Action. And out of Compassion in Action grew a group called the Twilight Brigade. And that's where we get to Danyon Brinkley. So it's kind of like 6 degrees of separation, and this whole thing just flows. So out of my beginnings of the LA Center for Living with Marianne, Cassandra, and many other people, and I was actually on the advisory board for Compassion in Action and Nightlight back in, I guess, about 5, 6, 7 years ago, that's where I first met Danyon. And Danyon is this powerhouse. I mean, he comes in to a room and the room is energized. And that's the person that we have on the show today, this being of energy and light. And so, Danyon, I really want to welcome you. I know you're in the middle of a training in L.A. and that you've taken the time to be on the show today. I really want to welcome you and thank you for being here.
Oh, and I appreciate it very much, Stuart. I was thinking, while you were doing the intro, I was thinking back through the years, and it's been 8 years.
Wow.
Because, you know, when Cassandra, and we decided to expand it, because some of the first hospice patients I had in the early years were people who were HIV positive, and there was such a stigma, and everyone was so frightened about it. No one would take these people or afraid to be around them. And so I guess I just migrated toward them because after going through what I went through, it didn't worry me if you just take the proper precautions. These people need support even more. And then I met Cassandra. And then because she just wanted to keep it, limited to HIV,
mm-hmm.
we took a branch and created Compassion in Action,
mm-hmm.
which I'm proud to say now has 5,800 volunteers
wow.
in 22 states working in VAs. We are the largest end-of-life care volunteer program for veterans in American history.
Jeez.
We die with more veterans than any other single organization ever coming forth since this country was founded. So I'm really proud of it. It's, you know, it's the destiny of all of us to find our way. And earlier you were saying, what does spirituality have to do with mental health? Spirituality is the only mental health that you can have.
I agree.
Because once you have a solid mental, spiritual connection to yourself, and then the rest of the world, even in the ups and downs that goes on in life, then you have a way to comprehend it, understand it, and relate. At least it happened to me. For people who don't know my story, I grew up basically as a jackass in South Carolina, and my entire life was based on, you know, how much damage I could do or how smart I could be or, you know, the whole way a bully learns his perspective. And then in 1975, I was struck by lightning while talking on the telephone. I was clinically dead for 28 minutes, completely paralyzed for 6 days, partially paralyzed for 7 months. It took me 2 years to learn to walk and feed myself. But in the course of it, I had what was now called a near-death experience, which was a term coined by Dr. Raymond Moody.
Mm-hmm.
And no one knew what it was or even related to it until then. And when I first had my experience, I never had heard of it. There was, I had no way to relate to it. If you talk to your doctor, he said that's something you need to talk to your minister about. You talk to your minister, and he said that's something you need to talk to your doctor about. So you
I think everyone is afraid to talk about death, near death, or to question what they've been raised to believe about this life and the hereafter. So I think when you bring that up, I think it pushes a lot of buttons, and a lot of people run from it, which is why the work that we've done with AIDS and the vets. I mean, if you think about veterans and people with HIV and AIDS, both of them for the longest time, and I believe still, have been the discarded groups, the forgotten groups.
Well, the dying is the most underserved population
exactly.
in America. Everybody, because people are afraid. Think South Carolina. If you come from South Carolina, everybody goes to hell where I come from, Stuart. I mean, that fundamentalist fervor. And that fear, you know, it's been one of my missions in my life to reduce the fear of death because it's a part of life. And when you look at good mental health, when good, solid mental health is to face it, I think that the Compassion in Action training, and Stuart, you would be so proud, it has evolved. You know, I've taken probably 10 different hospice training programs, and I stole the best parts from every one of those programs. And created our training program because we want to be able to talk about death. We in the Western world, we must deal with death. We must come to bear it because people in my age group, we the baby boomers, we have three things that must be focused on. Focus number one on ourselves. Focus number two, guarding our children so that they are safe and they're okay. Focus number three, protecting our parents. And when we look at the aging generations and we start to really look, that there is not one person that's listening to this show that's over 36 years old that doesn't know someone that's not in transition.
Mm-hmm.
Think of these statistics. If you're 37 years old or older, you live in the United States, and you have a family member anywhere in the world, you have an 81% chance that that family member is going to turn to you in case of a traumatic illness or terminal disease before they turn to a doctor or clergy. If you're 37 and you have a friend anywhere in the world, you have a 60% chance that friend is going to turn to you. And believe this or not, you have a 100% chance you're going to turn to you. So if you were in Las Vegas and you had an 81, 60, and 100% chance of something going to occur, would you roll the dice? The answer is yes. So when you look at that, it's all about your love for someone or someone's love for you to embrace this concept that we call death, which is just really a one door closing and another one opening.
Right.
Because that loved one is going to need you to help make the right decisions at the right time. And I know that everyone listening today knows that the federal government really cares about them, that the pharmaceutical companies really care about them, and that the doctors in general really care about them. I mean, they're so desperately loving them, and they get up every day with nothing on their mind but their well-being.
Okay.
Yeah, and if you believe that, I got to throw some land in front.
I know. I love your humor and cynicism.
The way
I see you, it came to me when I was looking at your book today, is that you went from blue collar to minister's collar. And I mean, that was the image that I got, the way you kept describing yourself. And then on page 45 of your book, I love the way you described it. The one thing I know for sure is this. One day I never believed any of this. The next day I was dead. And the day after that I became everything I never believed.
Because people, you know, it happens to a lot of us. All of us have events in our lives that truly transform it.
Mm-hmm.
Mine is a little more radical than most. Because you think about this, Stuart. I've been struck by lightning twice, which led to having to have collapsing and then going into cardiac arrest and having to have open heart surgery. With complications from those two, 7 years later, I blew three subdural hematomas in my brain. I started bleeding to death. I had to have emergency brain surgery where they drilled holes in my skull. Then I was spent 41 hours in recovery and had a massive grand mal seizure. Went back into cardiac arrest, was put on in the neurocardiac ward on life support, given an 8% chance of survival. So I've learned so much in the last 54 years, but especially in the last 30 years, about how this whole system works, that by religions and institutions and governments create a fear-based, totally unnecessary, but a fear-based that literally controls us, that literally has us either thinking we're going to hell or thinking of the pain and trauma that's associated with it. And then on top of that, the D word is not spoken.
Right.
And I believe that, especially since mental health is so important, I believe that what has to happen is to embrace it.
Right.
Because then we don't leave our parents or our friends in the hands of the profession that doesn't really care. And then we have a sense of empowerment.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to tell everybody listening to this show, you will not die. It does not happen. It will not happen. And the sooner you start to look at that, the more you look at the methodologies around it, how you leave this world, and you keep control. You have control of your life. And I think we all search for number one, control in our lives, and number two, it's direction. And what are we doing here? And how did we get here? And you know, where do we go when we leave here? These all stay current and constant in our lives. And I think that the Secrets of the Light, the new book, you know, Saved, save so millions and millions and millions and millions and millions of copies. And now the secrets, because I wanted people to have what I knew without having to die to get there.
Mm-hmm.
The strategies, the spiritual strategies for empowerment, both here and in the hereafter. Because there is a part about the near-death experience, you know, there are anomalies, you lift out of your body, you're aware of what's going on around you, you come to a sense of awareness that you're no longer connected to this physical realm. Then there is the tunnel and moving down the tunnel and met by your relatives and your friends and everything that you've ever loved or that's ever loved you. So for you out there who are wondering if your pet will be there, your pet will be there. If it's a pet chicken or goat, whatever it was, a parakeet, it'll be there. Love never changes. It's not like in the form where you got a goat running up to you or a dog running up to you. But the connectedness of that love stays in that world of the energetic natures of people. And you're surrounded, and then down the tunnel and into the place of light, the relatives. And then a lot of people see Buddha, Muhammad, Allah. Everybody has a name for this beautiful spiritual being. But that spiritual being is your higher consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
You never ever left it. You know, you really never left heaven. Just an aspect of you is focused in this physical world.
Wait, but I want to stop you here for a minute, Daniel, because what you just said, I think, is a comment that I always believe in trying to teach, is the universality of religions and spiritual beliefs, whether you call it Allah, Buddha, Muhammad, Jesus, Moses, higher power, God. You know, here we live in this world where the world's falling apart because of people's positioning of religions and these belief systems. I mean, we're moved to kill one another because of it, when basically it's just different forms of the same consciousness. And if we could all get and honor the fact that everybody's connecting with that one consciousness, and it doesn't matter how they choose to worship it or believe it, so long as the consciousness is one of love and service, then we can stop killing each other and stop pulling apart and start joining together.
We don't have much of a choice, Stuart.
I agree.
When you take a good look at these religions, people used to ask me, they said, Daniel, when you went through this, did you get religion? And I said, no. Did you get spiritual? A little bit. And then they said, well, what did you get? I said, I got smart. How many times do you think they have to kill you before you catch on? And so when you look at it, I look at religions. I think everybody ought to have them one. And I think there's about 6 billion of them in the world because everybody worships or serves in their own way. But these religions are cultural society controls and mythologies. But what it's really trying to show us is that there is a oneness. There is a way and a place and a presence that we're all connected. And we just try to find ways to identify with it. Everybody, we're all connected. There's an interconnectedness of us. I think the earth life is to create the point and perspective of individuality, because maybe sometimes we get over on the other side, we get a little tired of being connected to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And since we all really work together in these areas, we need to have that point of separation.
Mm-hmm. Now, before we continue, I want to remind people, because if the people that are listening to the show today have not already been challenged and charged and maybe upset or maybe comforted by what we're talking about already, this is a live show. If you have a question for me or Daniel or comment about the topic, the number in the Phoenix area is 480-949-1310. That's 480-949-1310. And if you're listening via the Internet, as I know a number of you are because I get emails from you, it's a toll number but worth the call, 480-949-1310. So, back to what you were saying, it's about the universality, and, you know, the Course in Miracles, which is a book that, you know, I've read, I can't say I've read the whole thing because I'd be lying, and I don't believe in lying.
At least not today.
Right. You know, that the Course and, you know, most metaphysics say we're all one mind. You know, there's only one being on this planet, and we're all it.
I agree.
We're just physical manifestations that we perceive as separations from that as a way of doing the journey and getting the lessons and going back to that one consciousness after we shed these bodies. It's the same energy in all of us, and the goal, I think, the basic lesson is beginning to see, is to learn to see the sameness in all of us, which is love and a consciousness that we recognize in one another.
Well, it's also to create ways. You know, in The Secrets of the Light, I wrote the seven truths. Because, you know, people, what really goes on is they fill us with so much crap. People are always telling us that we're worthless or you can't take care of yourself. We built an entire fear-based reality that everything is based on fear. And then on top of that, we have forms of government like democracies competing against theocracies. And we live in terrorism, and we live in such fear. And then the fear of death or the fear of pain, where we have to change that mentality. It's got to be changed, because first, it's an illusion.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the real way. Second, love is the most powerful force. And love is so overused and overwrought, so, and it creates for so much persecution, but you know, through people and abuse and stuff like that. But the love that I have seen in my journeys to the other side is a love that you bond with and you embrace. But we all have to find a way to look at ourselves. We all have to find a sense that's a true sense of the way to perceive ourselves, because perspective is the way you understand things. And seeing it in the right perspective, or giving yourself a perspective by which to view it from, is where the real empowerment comes from. That's why I wrote The Secrets. You know, and people can go to The Twilight Brigade or Amazon.com. I don't think it comes out in the bookstores. I don't think it comes out into the bookstores until next month. But, you know, people can get them, because I sell these books as a, this is part of a fundraiser for The Twilight Brigade. You know, if you purchase this book or you go to the website and you buy it, you are making a donation to train people to be at the bedside of veterans. But, you know, Stuart, I put seven things that I think are the absolute basic truths that a person can really build their life on. And I've discovered these truths from going through these experiences, but like you know, I've been a hospice volunteer for 27 years.
Wow.
I have almost $17,000 at the bedside. I've been with 350 people taking their last breath in my arms, and I've been around more than 1,200. And I sit in the Office of Compassion and Action, and when you have 5,000 people with more than $400,000 at the bedside, and probably close to 19,000 people have passed, there's a lot of reports that come in.
Mm-hmm.
We have to be aware that 56,000 veterans are dying every 30 days.
Wow.
And by the year 2008, that number will be at 106,000. These guys and these men and women served this country, and now they're in that age group where they're passing World War II.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how many people out there have been by to tell them thank you or been to see them, but no one needs to die alone.
Right.
The greatest mental help is that someone comes to visit, and I'm making rounds to, I'm doing this training, and I'm making rounds visiting with these guys. Because this is what made this country so great.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have, you know, I read an article yesterday, an obituary about, I forgot which state it was, but the last surviving veteran in that state from World War One, who was
106
years old. Where?
In Nevada.
It was Nevada. I remember reading that. And it's like there's a passing of the consciousness. It's like, you know, for most people, World War One is ancient history. World War Two is still part of a generational thing that, you know, my father served in the Army, in actually the Air Force, and there are there's a dwindling population of World War II veterans.
32,470 every 30 days.
Wow. And
they'll
then
be
we
gone
have the
by
Korean
the
War, and then such a conflict of the Vietnam War, where the conflict wasn't just in Vietnam, the conflict was international.
People don't realize that Vietnam was a UN war. It was a United Nations conflict.
Wow.
It wasn't just an American. There was 11 countries represented, and we lost 55,000, but
right.
That many more came home crazy.
Right, and those are the ones, because even when I lived in Florida and I was in private practice, you know, I had a number of clients who, because of drug abuse and stuff, were Vietnam vets, and I remember one in particular that had never talked about Vietnam at all. He kept smoking pot every day. His wife was going crazy because of it. And we had been working together for 2 years before finally, and I won't get into how, something triggered memories of Vietnam while he was in my office. And I had never experienced the intensity of actually energetically going back to those jungles with a client. And for 3 hours, I couldn't leave his side because he was journeying back there in memories that had been repressed since he'd been back from Vietnam.
Well, if you were in that conflict, you have to repress.
I know. And all of a sudden, they started coming up. Somehow, he just started trusting me enough, and he couldn't hold it back anymore. And for 3 hours, he journeyed, and so much came up. And the only support for these guys, I mean, I'm not a veteran. I'm this therapist who's a gay man who actually marched against Vietnam back in the day when I was in college and stuff. And here he is, you know, here I am now supporting him with as much love as I could garner because he was just this amazing man. And I had to turn to someone for help. And in those days, the only place they could go were these vet centers that were being opened, you know, storefront places, because it's the only place they could feel safe. And the only way he'd go down from West Palm Beach to Fort Lauderdale is if I went with them. And the only way he'd fit in on the group is if I could sit in with them. And here I'm a non-vet, and they gave me permission to sit in with him, and they had a lot of fun testing me. You know, they really raked me through the coals, but they did it with a smirk on their face because they knew I was there with one of them and that I cared enough to actually walk the extra mile, so they were just having fun with me. But they were real grateful that someone who really didn't know the experience cared enough to get down there with them and to get him into those groups.
Well, that's what the Twilight Brigade is about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're starting to look at, right now, Stuart, we see Vietnam, Korea, but Gulf War. You know, people don't realize that the Gulf War is going to kill, the first Gulf War is going to kill so many. Because they came back with what we call Gulf War Syndrome,
mm-hmm.
which everybody acts like they don't know what it is, but we who live in this business, we know what it is.
Right.
Just like what's getting ready to happen in Afghanistan and in Iraq.
Right.
You're going to have the Gulf War Syndrome come again.
Right.
And then the government will have no way to hide from the fact that it's in your mind. They say it's in your mind, but do you realize these numbers? You think about this. We had 350 people died in the Gulf War. Okay, Desert Storm and Desert Shield. And today, more than 40,000 have died. And not only are more than 40,000 have died, think of this. There's more than 110,000 wives of veterans who have come home and who have Gulf War Syndrome. 212,000 children have it, and just that many pets. Think about that. This could be transferred. And what it is, you know, we've been looking for years to figure out what is wrong, what's happening. I'll tell you what it is. It's a depleted uranium shell. When you build a weapon, and what we use in most of our heavy artillery, we use depleted uranium. That depleted uranium, when you do a bombing, it covers everything with a dust. That dust gets into your lungs, and it can be transferred through sexual activities, through coughing, through being around people. And all of a sudden, our only weapons that we use is what's killing us. You watch, mark my words. You will see so much of this Gulf War type diseases coming back from the people who are coming back from Afghanistan and the people who are coming back from Iraq. And we can't face it because everything that we, all the weaponry that we have uses highly radioactive uranium in a depleted round.
Well, it's similar to the Agent Orange issues that the Vietnam vets faced. And at the LA Center for Living, it was quite a unique experience to be running support groups for Agent Orange, for veterans with Agent Orange issues and their families, and them walking in with all these gay men with AIDS and understanding the oneness and the mutual support that was there for one another was just inspiring to see. And
well, but you know, people find a way. The spiritual side of people find a way to go close to each other, because when you're facing what is quote unquote the end of life, there is a certain mindset that comes with that that truly begins to open up your heart, no matter what your prejudices are or your biases are.
Mm-hmm. I
believe that everybody should do a little hospice work. I'm just such a devout believer in it, because we're all going to be hospice volunteers one day or not.
Right.
And the more you know about it, the more you're empowered. Like this program in Glendale, we're coming to Glendale.
For a minute, because I think that's important. I know Glendale, Arizona, right outside Phoenix, is going to be a healthy living conference that you're going to be speaking at next Saturday, the 15th of January.
Yeah, from 11:30 to 1.
That's when you're speaking, and the conference goes on all day with other speakers also.
Yeah, but what's really important, and I'm proud of Michelle and the people who've come together to put this together, and it's looking at healthcare and anti-aging and good conscious perspective. It's got people there. It's got brews so that you can hear a presentation on the subject matter, pick it up and try it. But it's also where you network. You find like-minded people. We all need support. We all need each other's support and help. And just in case it's a day a little harder than we normally want to deal with, there's somebody there to help. And that's what I do, these programs. You know, when you want to have good health care, if you know about death and what to look for, then I'm always back engineering health care. And everybody, if you're listening to this program, I need you to come to this, because I believe, Stuart, and this is like my own phraseology, but I believe that the battle for the souls of men, the true battle for what we're after, won't be fought in some desert over oil.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be in health care. It'll be looking at the aging and looking at Social Security and looking at Medicare. And if everybody takes a good look, if you don't think that we're in a great transition, look at the present administration's agenda to reform the Social Security, to change the IRS, to look at Medicaid and Medicare, to control lawsuits. Some of these things are good and some of these things are not. Nonetheless, the last 60 years or 70 years of American culture is about to change.
Right.
And we must change and be ready and prepared. We must be knowledgeable. We must join together to support some of this stuff, and we must make an active voice to stop some of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is another thing about mental health that people don't really realize, that one of the biggest fears is that President Bush has signed an executive order saying that every American is going to have to go through health care screening. That sounds like something that would be good, except that the whole support program, I've read this thing and looked through it and studied it. You have children 18 months old and older on drugs. And if your child is like me, you know, they didn't have what is that stuff that they give kids, Ritalin. They didn't have Ritalin when I was growing up.
Mm-hmm.
And I was as ADHD as you could possibly get.
I have ADD also.
Yeah, man. I mean, I was out there. But when you start drugging kids, because they're just growing up and being kids, and you got a drug screening program, that if they get diagnosed, and that's what they say it is, then they're going to have to take these medications or they won't be allowed in school.
Mm-hmm.
But this is where that we really have to be aware of this. This is one of the things I'm going to talk about, which is I don't just talk about death. Well, you know, Stuart, I don't just talk about death. I live. I'm 54 years old, and I live in this world. I live in end-of-life care, but I study health care and what's coming. But if you realize that we start drugging our kids, then their behavior pattern is the lack of attention and love and support. But when you realize that if you drug a kid, if you've taken some of these psychotropic drugs that are normally prescribed for children before 12 years old, then they won't be allowed in the military. They can't get drafted or put in the military because they are not capable of sustaining under the stress of combat. I mean, this means that the byproducts and the side effects of these drugs are leading to more harm as an elder, as they grow older, than ever just let them act out a little bit when they're kids.
Mm-hmm.
And I need people to know about this.
Right.
I look at the Codex, the big program of where the World Trade Organization will soon make vitamins. They're trying to classify vitamins as a drug. If they can classify it as a drug, it means that no one except a doctor can prescribe to you vitamin C, vitamin E.
I know.
Now, these are things that we have to unite. All your listeners, this is where we have to unite, and we have to come together like in a central place to voice our concerns and our control. When you look at the health care, in America, we pay the most money for health care than any other nation, and we're number 13th in the quality of health.
Mm-hmm.
So that means that we got to take a stand and take care of ourselves. We also have to look at what's happening in the health care industry, and we have to quit allowing people to let bean counters control health care, as opposed to good, loving physicians.
Right. You know, some people listening today would say, well, how did we get from serving the deaf to health care issues and things like that? Well, the key about all of this is, you know, the essence of life is love and service. And in being of service means owning your own power. Dealing with death means getting over your fears of that transition and being able to, in a loving space, be around those that are going through the dying process or supporting the loved ones and teaching them how to be a loving, powerful presence when that's happening. And dealing with that means living more powerfully, and living more powerfully means speaking up and being an activist.
But you see, Stuart, all these things are going on around the process.
Mm-hmm.
And I lived in death for so long, you know, I don't like people to pigeonhole me into just one subject. Because
right.
I have to help people make decisions on what to do with their moms and their dads.
Right.
I deal with people who's lost their children, and a parent can never get over losing their children. I look at what's going on in suicide among teenagers because I'm dealing with these things.
Right.
You can't just stick your head in the sand.
Well, that's the point I'm making. It's like all of it. I know that my experience of the bedsides, you know, you talked about being over 37, and if that's the case, you're going to be dealing with somebody who's going to need sooner or is needing now support in the dying process. Well, here we were in our 20s and 30s because of HIV, reluctantly and out of necessity doing that same type of work at ages before we expected to. But we live in a Western society where we're not used to that. And it was the gifts of those friends and the people that I love so dearly and people that I just met that really awakened me to some of the miracles. You talked about your near-death experience awakening, but a lot of people, including yourself, I know when you've been at bedsides, experience that light as the body is ceasing to operate and the energy and the love surrounding this whole experience.
Or seeing people come to get them.
Exactly. Were my awakening points. And everybody, you know, it's like, you've gone to the extreme. You've gone into death three or four times already. And the message is to wake up, to be a teacher, to start identifying your higher purpose and your assignment on this planet. We can learn from people like you and me and so many others that have had extreme experiences to realize we don't need to go to extreme experiences if we can open our hearts to the words and the experience of those that have had what you have. You call Secrets of the Light an instructional manual.
Yeah, because if you go back and you look through, Stuart, after 54 years and 30 years in death, I deal with it every day, or issues. You know, so many people call, and I help them find their DD-214s or where to go and who to go to for the basic needs, you know, councils on aging and these kinds of things. And the more we know, the more we live in it and look at it, the less afraid we become of it. But even more than that, the more empowerment that comes from by doing this kind of work, you realize it's not as near as scary as anybody told you, but it's just the most rewarding.
Rewarding and empowering and warm.
Because service,
mm-hmm.
service,
right.
Taking who you are and helping somebody is the greatest way to find a sense of self-worth. And once you find a sense of self-worth that I can help that person, you change your perspective about yourself. And once you start to change that perspective, you demand respect. You demand to be appreciated because you have found an inner sense of service, of a spiritual identity that I can make a difference in the life of this person. And for me, in the veterans' issues, this person gave me a chance to walk free in this country. I see guys and men and women who haven't had anybody come to visit them in 10 years.
Wow.
I got this little story. If you want to find for people, let me tell you my Christmas story. I was making my rounds, which means I come and I visit guys that are on the list. We all take it in shifts. And it's got four men to a room, each in their beds. And most of them will never get out of these beds. And I got this man, you know, you get a list and you go and you speak to him and you see who wants to be bothered with you or not. And this is what America's greatness is about. In one corner of a four-man room, there sat a man in his bed, Sydney, and his wife. They have been married 67 years. He'll never get out of that bed. And where their Christmas was after 67 years, was her sitting next to him in that bed with three other guys, her sitting there holding his hand. I had never seen such love, such support, and the privilege of going to get them a chocolate muffin. And to go and get that chocolate muffin and to bring it back, and that was their celebration of Christmas together. And to watch her look it in his eyes and he look in her eyes is probably the greatest gift I could have ever gotten, because when your life is down to just that, and she'll have nobody, because she was 88 and he was 94, they have nobody. And the privilege that I got to be there and to show her I cared and that she could leave and go to her children, who are 10 years older than I am, to go to her children and know that I'd be taking care of him, or someone like me would be taking care of him. That is the real power of mental health.
Right.
That's the real power of a spiritual identity. And this guy had a silver star, a bronze star with oak leaf clusters. These are from valor and courage in defense of this country. And I'll tell you another thing about end-of-life care. You find out what really, truly matters. You sit at the bedside and you listen. Because most of what we do is we train you to listen and to ask the right questions. And in the course of asking the right questions, you really find out what matters in this world. you know, wasn't your yacht or how much money you made. It was about how much love you gave to this world and how much love came back to you for it. Because that's what you take with you from this world to the next. And I hope that your listening audience seizes the day and to become an active part of this process, because one day you will be in it, and you can really find out a sense of self-worth and identity. And we all have to have this so that we know what to do at the right time, and we have a sense of ourselves.
You said it beautifully in your book, and I want to quote this for a minute. Through volunteerism, I became a spiritual activist. As I spent years bearing witness to the enormous grief, trauma, and bereavement inherent in the human death process, I found my spiritual place and purpose. Putting this wisdom and compassion to good use, I invite you to explore with me the ways in which each one of us can prepare for the years and life ahead. And I know that's what you're saying, but it's beautifully put in those words, too.
But you do the work, too. But everybody that's listening, no, it doesn't always just have to be I want everybody to face death because it empowers you to live your life.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody, there's mentorship, there's a crisis line, there's a women's abuse shelter, there's elder abuse. You know, here's your statistic. The largest increase in abuse in the United States in 1996, there's been a 150% increase in a group of abused people. You know who that group is?
Elder.
Women from 78 to 95 years old. The abuse in nursing homes and home health care and family members has increased 150% since 1996 of women 78 to 95. What in the hell is wrong with us? Because if you can sit on this phone, you can listen. I mean, if you can listen to this radio show, and that does not move you to want to do something, or try to understand it, or to put your foot down to your congressman, your senator, your local representative, then there is something seriously wrong. And this is what I try to do. You know, I don't try to make people feel bad. I try to make them find a cause. Because until you have something that means so much to you that it moves through you mentally, emotionally, physically, and spiritually, you'll never be happy.
Right. And you're right. It's about finding a cause that resonates to you. And you and I found it through service to the dying, me through my AIDS work and you through the veterans. And it doesn't matter what it is, so long as it's something that's improving the quality of life on this planet and bringing peace and compassion and understanding between individuals and groups.
I agree 100%.
You know. Now,
here's what I want to give everybody a great quote.
Good.
Unbelievable. It is unbelievable what an unbeliever has to believe to remain an unbeliever. Think of this. It's unbelievable what an unbeliever has to believe to remain an unbeliever. I find this so much about people dealing with death. They say, you know, I listen to it all the time about what people's interpretation of death, and they seem to find a way to eliminate the fact that there are so many of us who's been through it.
Yep. Now, we only have, I wanted to really get into more of the four powers, but we really don't have time. We only have a few minutes left here. And in closing, number one, I want to just bring in, you know, we're talking about dealing with death and dying, and in the U.S., it's something that's always been on the back burner in Western, well, mostly in the U.S., not even so much in Europe, because extended families tend to be more aware and be present when grandparents are dying and have, I think, like our Native Americans, more respect for elders than most of us in this country have. You know, when 9/11 occurred, we were all in shock because it brought something like that so close to home.
Or the recent tsunami.
Well, that's where I was going. And, you know, we're talking about 3,000 in America, and that is an amazing number of souls, but it brought it so close to home, whereas the tsunami, 150,000, it's news on the television. I know it's moving most of us to donate and stuff, but the immensity of what's happening is whole villages and whole families have just been swept out to sea.
But you know what, Stuart? That's only 3 months. That's only 3 months of veterans.
Mm-hmm.
56,000 to 60,000 a month.
Right.
So that's only 3 months of what's happening right here in America for the people who give you your freedom.
Exactly. But the point is, the tsunami stuff becomes this event. And the work that you're doing and so many other volunteers are doing on a day-to-day basis is the work that's done quietly with the people who are in the shadows, so to speak. And the job of True Service is to actually, in a sense, go into the shadows and be a light to those people in that time of what for many is a time of darkness and help create a sense of light in their environment.
Well, I'm asking everyone who's listening to number two, please come to the Glendale Civic Center on the 5th next Saturday and be a part of this program.
Mm-hmm.
If it's not my particular show that you want to, I think there's a website that you can go to, or you can call I don't even know the number.
Well, for Healthy Living,
mm-hmm.
There's a website, www.kfnxhealthyliving.com. And you can also get a phone number on my website for the show, tellthetruthfaster.com. There's a little box on the homepage that will give you a phone number you could call for information so you don't have to write it down, tellthetruthfaster.com. If you really want to hear Danyon speak more and you can't make it to that conference, this show will be up on the archives in about a week so you can listen again and gain some more inspiration, or you can, if you have someone that you feel needed to hear the show and wasn't listening, they can for free go to the archives and listen to all my past shows.
And I highly recommend it, and I'd like to tell your audience too, I know Stuart well. He's dedicated to the uplifting consciousness, dedicated to getting people proactive in caring. Because the more we care, we don't need just events like the tsunamis. We don't need just single events that move us. We need constant, quiet movements that empower us on a daily basis to see kinship, love, and concern. And everybody, please get involved in an organization that you feel moves your heart. Because the compassionate volunteer is spiritual activism, and you will find consciousness, safety, and well-being like you've never experienced any other way from you doing the service.
Danyon, I really want to thank you. Our time's coming to a close.
Well, have me back, Stuart.
I would love to, and I want to acknowledge Isla Claire Teresa, Jay Mahan, and Jim Walton, all Capricorns, friends of mine, having birthdays this week, and my own birthday next Friday, the 14th.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. And I really want to thank you again, Danyon, for all your work and for the time you've taken today to be on the show.
TheTwilightBrigade.com.
Yes, TwilightBrigade.com. And you can get that connection on my website, too. So thank you all for listening. We'll be back again next week with Tell the Truth Faster on KXAM in Phoenix.
Love you,
Phoenix. Have a good weekend.
Love you, Stuart.
Love you too, Danyon.